sun, about to go supernova. I'm 18 different kinds of angry. I'm mentally listing off all the ways I could kill Tom and make it so the authorities never find his skinny ass. Explain, I growl. Well, I don't know what you heard or anything, but... You know what? Don't bother with the explanation. Just tell me what he wants with my phone and I might not break your miserable neck. Tom's pupils dilate, a panic response. Some guys might not believe a girl so small and so blonde as me could ever be violent. Tom believes me, though. He sees the murder in my eyes, and he knows, drunk though I am, that I will skin him alive.
I don't know. I guess I have no clue why he wanted it. He told me to fix it as quickly as I could and then take it over to his place. He told me to leave it on the desk in his room and then get the fuck out of there. That's it. That's all I know.
He grabs the white napkin Elliot was holding his brownie in and waves it in the air.
I'm sorry, okay? Look, I surrender. I'm not good at this kind of stuff, all right? I'm used to people like you and like him ignoring me. I don't exist to you people, and I want to go back to being invisible because this really sucks.
It's taken me a beat to notice the split lip again. I see it now, though, because he's been talking so animatedly that he's reopened the wound, and a snake of bright red blood's running down his chin. Ren did that to him. Beside me, Presley coughs uncomfortably.
Maybe we should go find Karina. I don't want to get tangled up in Riot House shit. This sounds like a you and her kind of thing.
I advance on Tom, pitying him and hating him in equal parts. He goes very, very pale.
What does that mean? People like me?
You know, he says softly, popular kids, members of the social elite. You're like them.
The fury that's been spinning around like a ball of white searing heat in my chest detonates, shattering my mind apart for a moment. Jem awkwardly sidles her way out of the group, slinking away, her eyes glued to the floorboards. Elliot and Clay look too stunned to move.
I'm not like them, I hiss. I'm nothing like them. How can you say that? You don't know me at all.
Tom lowers the napkin as if resigned now to his fate. He knows he's said the wrong thing. I'm a microsecond away from throwing myself on him when Karina arrives in a swirl of purple fabric and braids.
Hey, what's up, guys? Jem just said a fight was about to break out in here.
I can't bring myself to look at her. Tell her what you did, Tom. He blinks.
It isn't like I had a choice, he moans.
Karina's friendly tone evaporates.
Tom Petroff, tell me what you've done.
15. Elodie.
For the record, this is a horrible idea. You know that, right?
I grunt, tucking my chin into the collar of my jacket. It's freezing in Karina's car. Her mood's frosty, too. She's pissed that she had to leave her Sandberg lookalike unattended back at Oscar's. But this was her choice.
I told you to stay, I grumble. I could have ordered an Uber.
Uber drivers won't take us up the mountain, she grouses. Too many entitled Wolf Hall kids have thrown up in the back of their Priuses. We're blacklisted down to a man.
Well, that's bullshit.
So no, you couldn't have ordered an Uber. I'm the only way you were getting back up this hill, and I'm telling you, categorically, that this is fucking insanity.
You said it yourself, Carrie. Those arrogant motherfuckers are in Boston tonight. They won't be back until tomorrow at the earliest. So what does it matter? They'll never even know we were there.
Of course they'll know. Ren will know as soon as he sees that your phone's not in his room. And then what?
Right. And then what? He
can't exactly report it as a theft, can he? He obtained my property via means of assault for unknown nefarious purposes. The last thing he's gonna do is tell anyone that I went into their precious house to take back what is rightfully mine.
Christ, Karina mutters through clenched teeth. You have no idea what you're getting yourself into, girl. No idea what you're getting me into. You're still drunk. Why don't we wait until morning? Have a think and see if we can't come up with a better plan.
I'm stone cold sober now, and you know it. Look, I totally get it. If I were you, I wouldn't want any part of this either.
Why don't you just drop me off in front of the house and go back to the party? I can walk the rest of the way from there.
2 miles, Elle? In the middle of the night? In the cold and the dark? Along windy, narrow roads? You'll get smoked by a car. They won't even see you until it's too late. What kind of friend would that make me, huh?
I have nothing to say to that. What can I say? Hiking my way back to Wolf Hall sounds like a shit time. There's no sugarcoating it. And she would be a crappy friend if she left me on the side of a mountain road. I'm grateful that she's in possession of a fully functioning conscience. That said, I don't want to put her in a compromising position, though.
We sit in silence, watching the twin beams from the headlights pierce through the dark like swords of light, illuminating 15 feet of blacktop in front of us. After a while, Karina says,
"Fucking piece of shit. I knew he was creepy, but I didn't know he was this creepy. He was probably gonna load up that phone with spyware apps. He'd have been listening to your calls and reading all of your texts. He would have been able to access your camera whenever he wanted. God, I didn't even think about that until now."
I've thought about it. I have experience with cloned phones and all manner of different spyware. It's all been loaded onto my phone before. What Karina doesn't know is that my phone is already brimming over with ghost apps and dummy screens, all designed to trick me into thinking I'm not being watched. My father would have made sure of it.
"Well, get in, get the phone, and then we won't have to worry about any of that," I mumble.
"You should call the cops, Elle. I'm serious. This is some shady shit."
"Let's just see what we're dealing with first." I'm fobbing her off. I'm sure she knows that. But getting the police involved now would be bad. For starters, Wolf Hall will report the incident to my father, and there's no way in hell I'll risk him jumping on a plane to come and find out what's going on in person. I'd rather be dragged over hot coals than have to face him. My pulse jumps all over the place when Karina kills the headlights and turns into the driveway that leads through the forest to Riot House. I can tell by the way she grips onto the steering wheel that she's anxious. About getting caught breaking into the place, or being here in general, I can't tell. But I'm beginning to feel really bad for putting her through this. In the pressing darkness, all I see are trees. And then we turn a sharp corner, and the house appears out of nowhere. The three-story structure so large and imposing that it's a miracle it isn't more obvious from the road. It's difficult to tell how old the place is. Perhaps it would be easier to assess when the place was built during the daytime, when there's a little more light to work with. Right now, the floor-to-ceiling glass windows on the second floor makes it look modern, but the exterior makes it appear very old indeed. "Just looking at the place makes me want to throw up," Karina murmurs. "Doesn't it look like it was conjured right out of your nightmares?"
I look at the house, shrouded in shadows, each window cast into darkness, and the place looks desolate. "No," I tell Karina, "I don't have nightmares." She blows out a long breath through her pursed lips.
"I envy you. That must be nice."
Twist the key in the ignition, killing the engine.
"Then what are you afraid of? Monsters? Ghouls? Flesh-eating beasts?"
"No," I tell her,
staring up at the house with a steely resolve. I'm afraid of real life, the people who are supposed to care for you the most. Karina doesn't ask how I know how to pick a lock. She urges me to hurry up and get it done, peering over her shoulder into the forest, as if she's expecting Dashiell to emerge from the night with a hatchet in his hand, ready to dismember both of us into tiny pieces. He doesn't come, though, and I have the door to Riot House open in record time. I enter, preparing myself for the avalanche of empty beer cans and festering takeout containers. But the place is neat as a pin. Scratch that. It's actually beautiful. Karina turns on the flashlight feature on her phone, dispersing the dark, and I marvel at the grand entranceway I find myself in. A huge, magnificent staircase stands before me, splitting off to the left and to the right, leading to the eastern and western wings of the house. On the first floor, huge paintings hang on the walls, mostly cool, sleek, contemporary art that doesn't seem to be of anything in particular. But as I gaze at them, I'm hit with the unsettling certainty that they're all depictions of raging storms, brought to life in swirling blacks and blues, whites and grays. They feel angry. "Renz," Karina murmurs. "He might be the biggest shithead to walk the earth, but the bastard can paint." I reel in my surprise, storing that information away for later. The house has a unique, dizzying smell to it. Far from the sweaty socks and unwashed teenage boy odor I was expecting, the air's colored with notes of bergamot, black pepper, and rosewood. There are knickknacks and small keepsakes everywhere I look, placed with thought and care on the exorbitantly expensive-looking sideboards, tables, and the bookcase that runs along the back wall by a door that leads off into the unknown. I gasp when I look up. Holy shit. Yeah, Karina agrees, matching my stance as she cranes her head back, staring up through the winding staircases that wrap around what can only be described as the inner courtyard of the house. From where we stand, you can see all the way up to the top floor of the house, and beyond that, in the roof high over our heads, a vast skylight gives way to a view of the night sky that takes my breath away. Scores of brilliant pinpricks of light, burning away in the heavens, form the roof that Ren Jacoby sleeps under, and it's one of the most beautiful things I've ever seen. Come on. Karina takes me by the arm, pulling me toward the stairs. No time to admire the architecture. We need to grab the phone and get back to the academy. I have an awful feeling about this. Where's his room? Tell me and I'll go find it myself. Karina shakes her head. We'll go together. It's easier to get lost in here than you'd think. I squeeze her hand, giving her a reassuring smile. I'll be fine. Stay here and keep watch. If you see lights headed up the road, shout and we'll get the fuck out of here. One of us needs to be on guard. Uncertainty shines in her eyes, but there's relief in them too. She's glad of the excuse to stay downstairs, within sprinting distance of the exit. All right, go, and be quick about it. The top floor. When you get to the top of the stairs, turn right on the landing. Ren's room is the door right in front of you. There's a black feather nailed into the doorframe. I haven't been in there. I can't tell you where his desk is, but... Don't worry. Shh, it's okay. It's a desk. It's not like I'm looking for a hidden trap door or anything. Give me 1 minute and we'll be out of here. Shaking ever so slightly, Karina nods. Jesus, she looks like she's on the verge of tears. I don't know what she's so terrified of here, but her emotions are proving to be contagious. My heart thumps aggressively in my chest as I jog up the first flight of steps, where I take the next flight on the right. My lungs are burning like crazy by the time I hit the third floor, and by the time I reach the fourth, all I can hear is my blood charging behind my eardrums. Gulping down breath after breath, I don't waste a second. I head straight for the door on the right, curiosity eating at me like nobody's business when I see the lush black feather my friend told me would be nailed into the wood. It's right where Karina said it would be. Now, will his door be locked? A part of me thinks yes, absolutely. Ren's a private creature and he likely guards his personal space fiercely. But then he's also arrogant. Would Pax or Dash dare enter his inner sanctum without his permission? Highly improbable. And in what kind of world would Ren ever imagine an outsider having the gall to break into his home and then breach the privacy of his bedroom? Certainly not this world, the one in which everybody he comes into contact with, students and teachers alike, are afraid of him. When I place my hand on the brass doorknob, a quiver of strange energy ripples up my back. How many times has Ren placed his hand here, on this same polished, cool brass? 1,000 times? More, hundreds of thousands of times. He touches this doorknob more frequently than he touches almost any other thing in this house. And that knowledge makes a bolt of color creep into my cheeks. It feels like he and I are here together, the palms of our hands resting on top of the same buffed metal, like he and I are holding hands and... Dear God, Elodie, what the fuck is wrong with you? I wrench the doorknob around, not really wondering if it will be locked anymore, knowing that it won't be. And it isn't. Next thing I know, I'm standing in Ren Jacoby's bedroom. If I were brave enough, I'd turn on a light and get a proper look at the place. But I'm more jittery than I thought I'd be. There's enough moonlight flooding in through the two huge north-facing bay windows that I can see well enough anyway, and I don't want to risk alerting any passerby on the road that there's someone inside the house. The room is massive, at least twice the size of my quarters on the 4th floor of the academy. A monster of a king-sized bed dominates the space, with a carved solid wood headboard behind the mountain of pillows that is stunning in its intricacy. With all the colors in the room muted and muddied by the encroaching dark, the sheets could be gray, but they could also be blue. Something inside me twists sharply when I see the military corners Ren must have folded this morning, the moment he got out of that titanic fucker of a bed. The walls are covered in shelves, which are stacked high with books. There are so many books. Old and new, tatty and worn, glossy and unopened. That they're jammed into the spaces, lying flat on their sides, and wedged into tiny gaps wherever they'll fit. What else do we have? Let's see. No photographs in frames hung proudly on the walls. No pictures at all. A patinaed mirror in an antique gilt frame is propped up against a chest of drawers to the left of the bed. Aside from that, there's no real decoration to the room. No television. Stacks of papers sit forgotten on top of the shag rug before the open maw of a recently used wood-burning fireplace. Balled-up scraps of paper sit in the corners, discarded on the floor and forgotten about. In some form or another, there's paper everywhere. Old ticket stubs tucked under the lip of the paneling by the window. A pile of old posters, dog-eared at the edges, rolled into tubes and held together by elastic bands, leaned drunkenly up against the closet door. Stacks of letters collecting dust on top of an old-fashioned writing desk. I look up, and my breath stoppers up in the base of my throat. Well, fuck me. This place is full of wonders, especially when you take a beat to check out the view above your head. The ceiling is no ordinary ceiling. It's pure metal. My grandmother used to have a tin ceiling in her parlor that was stamped and embossed back in the 1890s. But this is nothing like that. It's copper, burnished, beaten, and shining, even in the half light. A vast expanse of polished copper that rises in the center, forming a focal point that draws the eye. It's staggering and beautiful and completely impractical. And I can't picture Ren commissioning something like this. Nor can I imagine him squabbling with the other boys to make sure he bagged this room before either of them could. It must look incredible when one of the floor lamps has been switched on. When Ren gets into bed each night, he gets to stare up at the light playing across the striations and the grain of the beautiful metal. And he probably doesn't appreciate it. Its magnificence is probably lost on a miserable fucker like him. Something about the room feels nautical, like the captain's quarters of an old galleon ship. There's no reason for me to feel that way. There are no nautical trinkets or themed decorations. It just does. There's a haphazard disorder to the place, combined with the ruthless organization of other aspects within the room, that gives the impression that this bedroom is occupied by a most eccentric mind.
Elle, hurry up for fuck's sake! I'm sweating down here!
Karina's voice floats up to me from downstairs, crystal clear and loud enough to startle the crap out of me.
She's right, Stillwater. You didn't come here to gawp at the guy's interior design skills. Get moving.
I obey the voice of condemnation whispering into my ear, hurrying across the room toward the desk. Up until now, I've been roiling in doubt. I've believed,
hoped, God, I'm pathetic,
that Tom was lying for some reason and that my phone wouldn't be here. That hope is ground to dust when I see the familiar gold case sitting on top of an open book, right there in the center of Ren's desk. I flip the phone over, and lo and behold, the screen has been completely repaired. Tom must have worked so quick. I can't believe I'd trusted him when he said it was going to take 3 full days to get this back to me, asshole. I hold my finger over the home button and the screen lights up, listing all of the calls and the texts that I've missed from Eden, Ayala, and Levi. Tempted though I am, I resist the urge to unlock the phone. There's no time for that.
Elodie, I'm not kidding. Let's go.
I drop the phone into the pocket of my jacket, already plotting and scheming all the ways I am going to hurt Ren Jacoby for this infraction. When my eyes catch on a phrase on the page of the open book that glues my feet to the bare floorboards. Here, I opened wide the door. Darkness there, and nothing more. I know that line. I know it from somewhere, but I just can't think where. A soft creak disturbs the hush, the sudden, weighty silence of a presence at my back. My skin prickles, each small hair on my arms and down the back of my neck, bristling under the force of another consciousness entering the room.
Oh, fuck.
Deep into that darkness peering, long I stood there, wondering, fearing, doubting, dreaming. A hushed voice murmurs, a voice of silk and honey, and the rough edge of a blunt blade. It stabs into me with a tender sweetness that fills me with fear. Dreaming dreams no mortals ever dared to dream before. But the silence was unbroken, and the stillness gave no token. And the only word there spoken was the whispered word, Lenore. Slowly I straighten, taking a step back from the desk.
Poe, the voice states behind me. A little overdone these days, given his recent hipster rise to fame, but I've been a fan of the Raven for a long time.
With all the care in the world, I turn around, and there, standing at the foot of his bed, is Ren. After only seeing him in his tatty black tee and his jeans for so long, I'm staggered by the sight of him in a suit and tie. The cut of the blazer is exquisite. The pants are perfectly tailored, too. He looks nothing short of incredible, but it isn't his clothes that have stolen my ability to form words.
It's just... it's him. His jet hair and the way it curls around the tops of his ears, the purse of his full lips, and the casual, amused upward tilt of his mouth, the faintest hint of stubble at his jaw, and the sharp, assessing eyes that bore into me like lasers from the other side of the room. Oh, how I hate that I love to look at this boy. He slips his hands into the pockets of his suit pants like he hasn't got a care in the world. "Got a favorite, Stillwater?" he purrs. "What?" My voice cracks on the word. "Poet." Ren smiles softly, then looks around the room as if he suddenly remembered he came in here looking for something, but can't recall for the life of him what it was. He goes to the bookcase, running his fingers along the spines. "Good poets bleed their pain out in their words. They capture the desolation and the hopelessness of life and transcribe it to paper in a way that makes you feel like your throat's just been cut. It's visceral. All troubled souls have a favorite poet." What the fuck is happening right now? Why the hell is he going on about poets and not quizzing me over the fact that he's just busted me in his room? I have to get out of here. Immediately. Who says I'm a troubled soul? Ren glances at me out of the corner of his eye. "Like recognizes like, Elodie. You and I. We share many commonalities." "No, we do not." I deny it with a little more passion than intended. "We're nothing alike. I'd never hurt someone until they agreed to steal someone's phone for me." Ren taps his finger along the shelf as he walks from one end slowly to the other. His eyes glint with amusement, a small flash of his teeth visible as he parts his lips. "I'm sure there are plenty of things you'd lower yourself to if you wanted something bad enough." "You're sick, Jacoby. Where? Oh my God, where the hell's Karina?" I didn't hear her panicking downstairs. She didn't shout that someone was coming. She's been silent since she last called for me. "You'd better not have fucking hurt her, Ren," I snap, hurtling toward the door. He doesn't try to stop me. Laughing softly, he pulls a book from the shelf, running his hand over the cover with a gentle reverence. "I didn't touch her. Don't panic. I might use force on misbehaving nerds from time to time, but I don't hurt girls." He runs his tongue over his teeth, his eyes fixed on the book in his hands. From my position by the door, his face is lit by the moonlight pouring in through the windows, highlighting the obsidian coloring of his long eyelashes against the stark paleness of his skin. "She's still downstairs, waiting by the front door. I came around the back." I stare him down, looking for the lie. Ren shrugs. "Stick your head over the banister and take a look. You'll find her right where you left her, hearty and hale, doing a really shit job of keeping lookout." I won't take him at his word. I back out of the room, my body awash with adrenaline, railing against the voice in my head that's screaming at me to run. When I lean over the handrail and look down to the first floor, I see Karina hopping nervously from one foot to the other, standing by the open front door, scanning the night for the guy who's already snuck his way into the house.
"You can tell her to go back to the academy if you like," Ren mutters.
He's leafing through the pages of his book now, his eyes roving quickly over the pages. How can he just stand there so nonchalantly? How can he not show the slightest signs of remorse for what he's done? He's taken my private property, planned on doing God knows what with it, and now he's just standing there, calm as you like, suggesting that I send my friend away and stay here with him? The guy is out of his fucking mind. "Why the hell would I do that?" I hiss. "You could skin me alive and wear my fucking head as a hat if she leaves me here with you." "Ha,"
Ren throws his head back and laughs, just once, snapping the book closed in his hands. The tendons and muscles in his throat work as he swallows.
Elodie, was that you?
Karina calls out.
Did you hear that?
I lock eyes with Ren, waiting for him to tell me to keep my mouth shut, but he just shrugs again. He doesn't care if she knows he's here, clearly. His wordless confidence is driving me up the fucking wall. She'll call the cops, you know, if you do anything weird, I warn him.
I should think so, he agrees.
And you don't care?
No, I have nothing to worry about. I'm not gonna do anything to you, Elodie.
That smile spreads, taking up more real estate on his treacherously handsome face. It'd be so satisfying to slap that smug arrogance right off him. I imagine what it'd feel like to do it, and my right palm tingles beautifully.
Elodie, what the hell?
Karina yells. I'm coming, I volley back to her over the handrail. Just a second. Ren holds out the book to me, curving a villainous eyebrow at me in an open challenge. He's daring me to come close enough to take it from him.
A Study in Scarlet, Sir Arthur Conan Doyle. It's not poetry, of course, but I think you'd like it, he says.
I didn't come here to talk books. I came here to get my phone back. Why the hell did you want it in the first place? What were you going to do? He frowns, giving this question some real thought.
Would any explanation be sufficient? He muses. If I tell you my reasoning and give you the truth, will it make what I did okay?
Absolutely not.
Then, if it's all the same to you, I think I'll save my breath.
I'm gonna kill him. I am going to fucking murder him until he's dead three times over. What is wrong with you? Just tell me what you were gonna do. Huffing. He's frustrated? He is? He steps toward me, holding the book loosely in his hands. I go rigid, frozen, still in place as he draws closer. It isn't until he's standing a foot away from me that I realize how close I've let him come, and that he could probably stave my skull in with that book if he wanted to. I should have run, I whisper. Out loud? God, I said it out fucking loud. Never mind, Ren. What the hell is wrong with me?
Yeah, you probably should have, he says. But everything's okay. I'm not a psychopath. Do you have any idea how beautiful you are when you're panicked? He asks. You get these spots of color in your cheeks, and your eyes come alive. I'm glad you didn't run.
He tacks his last statement on at the end, like he's only just realized this himself.
It means you're not scared of me. I knew that, but it's nice to be proven right. As for your phone, I'd say it was pretty obvious, wouldn't you? I wanted to strip all of your father's malware from it so I could message you, safe in the knowledge that I wasn't being spied on by one of the most belligerent men in the United States military.
Ha! Lord, you are fucking with me, right? You seriously expect me to believe that?
I don't expect you to believe anything.
Then why are you trying to paint yourself as a good guy?
I'm not. Would I have gone through your photos, looked at your texts, gone through your call list?
He laughs bitterly.
Sure, I'm not a good guy, Elodie. I've been informed by numerous trustworthy sources that I'm utterly reprehensible. But do you want to know my one glorious and shining redeeming feature?
Not really.
I never lie.
He declares this with a gravity and sincerity that rings true, an absolute. A check I could take straight to the bank. And I believe him.
I never lie. So when I tell you something, little E, you can believe it's true.
This superior, self-righteous ass, I hate him. All right, let's try this again then. Try telling me that you didn't destroy all of my stuff after you broke into my room. Let's see how that pans out for you, because I didn't. He looks me dead in the eye when he speaks, his shoulders square and back, his chin held scornfully high. And the same honesty I heard in his last statement lives in these two small words, too.
I could have broken into your room. I had no reason to.
My throat's on fire. Out of nowhere, my eyes are stinging like crazy. My mother's bird was smashed to pieces, Ren. So maybe you didn't break into my room yourself. Maybe that's how you're getting away with this vague half-lie. But you could have had someone else do it. Whoever came into my room broke the only thing I had left of my mom, okay? It was the only thing that was precious to me. It broke my heart seeing it shattered to bits. And I will never forgive you for that. My voice is thick with unshed tears. I've been putting off thoughts of Mom's bird ever since Harcourt told me it had been vacuumed up. But now the emotion crashes down on me. It feels as though I'm trying to breathe around a brace of broken ribs. Ren's shoulders drop. He lowers his chin, looking down at his hands. His expression's hard and unreadable. I'm sorry you lost something so precious. I know what that feels like, but I didn't have anything to do with it. I swear on my own blackened heart.
Elodie! Oh my God, El, I think he's in the house. Move, move, move!
A thunder of footsteps crashes up the stairs. Karina arrives on the top landing, gripping hold of the handrail. She bends over, panting, and looks up at me with wide eyes.
I heard a voice. I can't see anything, but I think he's in the... Oh my God, fuck!
She rockets a foot off the ground, her eyes bugging out of her head when she looks to the right and sees Ren standing right there.
Hi, Carrie, he says smoothly. Yeah, I'm in the house.
Karina draws herself up to her full height, doing a stand-up job of marshaling her surprise.
You should be ashamed of yourself, she says,
flattening down the front of her purple dungarees.
I tell you to stay away from her, and then you go out and steal her phone? You're fucked in the head.
Ren folds his arms across his chest, leaning against the wall beside his bedroom door.
Jesus, stop. I've had enough screeching for one night, thanks. The drive back from Boston was miserable. I had to hike all the way back here from town because the Uber driver wouldn't come up the mountain. And then I arrive home to find two petty thieves in here, sneaking around in the dark.
Karina grabs me by the hand.
Did you get what you came for? She asks me.
Yeah, I got it.
Then let's get out of here.
Elodie, wait.
Ren shoves away from the wall.
Here, take the book. I want you to have it.
He holds out the maroon leather-bound book with the gilded edges, offering it to me.
Don't, Karina warns. Remember Persephone? She accepted those pomegranate seeds from Hades and doomed herself to the fucking underworld.
Ren grins wickedly at Karina.
I appreciate the comparison, but you're being a little dramatic. It's nothing but a book. There's nothing magical about it. Or, rather, it's magical in the same way that all books are magical, but it'll hardly bind her to hell.
Elodie?
Karina tugs on my arm, trying to pull me away. Only a stupid, foolish girl with no common sense or care for her own well-being would take a gift offered by Ren Jacoby. I know this. So why do I reach out and take the book from him? And why can't I break eye contact with him as Karina drags me away down the stairs? 16. Elodie. A week passes, and then another. I go to class. I read the book Ren gave me under my sheets at night, armed with a flashlight, like someone might burst in and catch me doing something perverted.
When I finish it, I read it all over again. I hang out with Karina and press. The residents of Riot House don't even spare a look in my general direction, which is to say that Pax and Dash continue their lives like I don't exist, and Ren studiously ignores me whenever he gets the opportunity. A seat miraculously opens up on the front row of my French class. Dr. Fitzpatrick doesn't call on me for any more embarrassing tasks in English. Ren sprawls out on the couch with his usual practiced level of boredom, but he also keeps his snarky comments to himself. If I didn't know any better, I'd suspect that he was on his best behavior. This all changes on a Thursday afternoon, however, when a tall, willowy girl with luxuriously thick, long black hair saunters into Dr. Fitzpatrick's den, and Pax curses so loudly and so unexpectedly that Angelica, the timid girl who always wears her hair in braids, snaps her plastic ruler in two.
What the fuck? Karina groans next to me. This has got to be some kind of sick joke.
Greetings, Fitz.
The girl with the black hair preens, doing a little curtsy for the doctor, whose jaw is on the floor.
Mercy? To what do we owe the pleasure?
His mouth says pleasure, but his eyes say, dear God, no.
I had no idea you were swinging by for a visit. I assume that's why you've come all this way, to see how your brother's faring?
She slaps him lightly on the top of his arm in the flirtiest display I've ever seen.
No, silly. I re-enrolled. Switzerland was beautiful, but the cold got the better of me. New Hampshire's tropical by comparison this time of year.
Staring at this old/new student, I get the feeling that everyone in the room is leaning away from her, including me, and I don't even know why. What's going on? I mutter out of the side of my mouth.
That's Mercy, Karina says, rolling her eyes. She was a student here until last June. She decided to go study in Europe because America was too gauche. No one was sad to see her go. Least of all, Ren.
Ren? Why? Was he? Were they?
Ew, no!
Karina kicks me right on the ankle bone, and it hurts like a fucker.
Check yourself. She's his sister.
His sister? Seriously. What fresh hell is this? No one's ever mentioned another Jacoby. Another creature who shares the same diabolical genes as Ren?
They're twins, Karina continues.
Oh, ho, ho. This just gets better.
Ren's 8 hours older than Mercy. Their parents were gonna call her Helena, but they changed their minds when Mrs. Jacoby kept screaming, Mercy, Mercy, during the delivery. Their mom got so sick after giving birth to them that she went away for 6 months to recuperate afterwards, and their father hired a nursemaid to care for them. Mrs. Jacoby died when they were three. Apparently, she never regained her strength after the pregnancy, and she just faded away until there was nothing of her left. She was a pretty awful mom, by all accounts. I've had questions about Ren for a long time. I know so little about him, but there was no way I was asking Karina, especially not after the fucker tried to tamper with my phone. She would have strung me up and gutted me like a fish for being so stupid. But I feel like I should have known this somehow. I should have known that there was another piece of him out there in the world. Mercy turns and beams at the class, and I lean back into the couch, startled by the striking resemblance she shares with her brother. Her features are more refined and delicate, but they have the same shape face, the same chin, the same eyes, though the green of Mercy's eyes is nowhere near as vivid as Ren's. She sees her brother and waves. In his usual spot on the leather couch, Ren stares straight through her as though she isn't even there. Yeah. Like I was saying, Ren and Mercy used to be close, but not anymore, Karina whispers.
Well, I guess you should find yourself a seat then, Ms. Jacoby,
Dr. Fitzpatrick says with a tight smile. Mercy waltzes over to the leather couch and sits herself down on the end of it at her brother's feet. She swats at his boots, trying to get him to give her space, and a look of disgust forms on Ren's face. He gets up, silent as the grave, and heads for the exit. For the first time in 2 weeks, he looks at me properly as he walks right out of the door.
Ren, these classes are not optional, Dr. Fitzpatrick yells after him.
He's wasting his breath, though. Ren's already gone. The next evening, when I return to my room after dinner, I open the door and something rushes upward in the air, swirling in front of my face. I shriek, lashing out to defend myself in a rather shameful display of panic. I assume it's a bat, but I realize my mistake when the fat, lush feather softly floats down to the ground. It's black, deeply black. But when I pick it up and hold it up for closer inspection, an oily, metallic blue-green catches the light and shines through. It's beautiful. Its vein on either side of the thick woody spine, perfect in every way. A feather is a miraculous thing. So commonplace and everyday, we barely even notice them poking out of our pillows, or caught on a gentle breeze, or bobbing along the surface of a lazy river, caught in the eddies and rushing vortexes as it swept downstream. But a feather is a feat of engineering. And this feather, the one that must have been slipped beneath my bedroom door, is a beautiful one, to be sure. It's also a message. Some guys would slide a note under a girl's door. Even lazier guys would just send a text and have done with it. The guy who flicked this feather under my door is a fan of more subtle forms of communication. It started with the Morse code during the storm, but even that must be too obvious for him now. What is this feather saying? Beyond, "Remember me, I exist." I have absolutely no idea. All I know is that Ren was on the fourth floor of the girl's wing, and he was standing right outside my door.
Hey, are you almost ready?
Karina stands in the hallway behind me. She's got a cheeky grin on her face because things have been heating up between her and Andy Sandberg look-alike, and we're due to meet him in front of the Vista Theater in an hour to catch an evening movie. Some sci-fi flick about robots taking over the world. I slowly hide the feather behind my back.
You know what? I think I'm getting a migraine. I'm not sure sitting in front of a brightly lit screen is the best thing for me right now.
She pouts.
Oh no.
Her eyes are bright though. She invited me to see the film before Andre asked her out on a date, so she asked me embarrassedly if it would be okay if he came along. I told her I didn't mind if she went with him alone, but she'd railed against that suggestion, wouldn't even consider it. And I didn't want to be an asshole and flat out refuse to go. This is a convenient out. No one in their right mind wants to wind up as a third wheel in a movie theater. And Karina looks secretly pleased. In her shoes, I'm sure I would be too.
You're sure you're not just saying that to give me some alone time with the boy? She asks.
The boy. She says it affectionately, with a giddy glimmer in her eyes. She's attempting to hide her excitement about this date, but that really isn't working out for her.
Yes, I'm sure. When I get a migraine, I need to curl up in bed and sleep. It's the only way to get through it. I'll probably throw up everywhere if I come. You should swing by my room when you get back, though. Tell me how it all went.
Karina bites her bottom lip, grinning like an imp.
But what if I don't come back? Karina, you're gonna sleep with him?
She shrieks like a 5-year-old, ducking out of my reach as I try to slap her arm.
I don't know, maybe? I filled out the absence sheet just in case. Does that make me a slut?
No, not at all. If you think he's a good guy and he's treating you right, and you think you're ready, then why the hell not? My friend smiles from ear to ear, though a little calmer now.
Yeah, I mean, he's really sweet. I have to instigate every piece of contact between us, cause he's trying to be a gentleman. Honestly, I kinda want him to just throw me up against a wall and fuck me already.
Karina! She laughs. Her expression changes when she sees what I'm holding in my hand. Oh, shit. I've forgotten all about the feather. I've been absently twirling it around in my fingers, pressing the blunt end of the hollow shaft into the pad of my thumb while I've been talking to her.
That's pretty, Karina says, taking it from me.
She holds it up to the light.
Wow, that really is beautiful. Where did you get it?
Oh, it was out on the lawn. I found it on the grass. It's amazing how easily I lie to her. I don't like doing it, but I'd be a fool to tell her the truth. She'd freak the fuck out if she knew Ren had been up here. She'd cancel her date and spend the rest of the night trying to talk me into reporting Ren for sneaking up onto the girls' floor.
This incursion is the least of his many sins, but Karina will seize it with both hands if she thinks it'll be enough to get him expelled from the academy.
I've never seen a feather like that before. It's perfect, she says, offering it back to me. I take it from her. Yeah, it is.
You should keep it. Do something pretty with it. I know how to make it into a hair clip. I can show you if you like.
That'd be cool. She claps, pulling in a deep breath.
Okay, I'm gonna get out of here. Wish me luck. I might have stories to tell when I get back.
I wait for her to disappear down the hallway and turn the corner before I take out my cell phone and begin to type out a message. Me. It's beautiful, but I'm not keeping it. Three dots appear almost immediately. Ren. Liar. Me. You've got to stop. Ren. Why say something you don't mean? Me. What the hell are you talking about? Ren. You tell me I have to stop, but you don't want me to stop. That's the last thing you want.
God damn it. This asshole makes me want to scream.
Me.
You don't know that. You have no clue what's going on inside my head.
Ren. I know it's Friday night and you aren't going anywhere. Me.
Yes, I am. I'm going out with Karina.
Ren. Strange. I just saw her burn down the road in that shitty Firebird of hers, and you weren't sitting in the passenger seat.
Me. Stalker?
Ren. I notice things, little E. Sue me. You stayed at the academy because you want to see me.
Me. You think so fucking highly of yourself, don't you?
Ren. Raw honesty looks a lot like arrogance to the untrained eye.
Me. God, just stop.
Ren. Meet me.
Me. No.
Ren. Give me 1 hour. If you don't come, I'll have to come to you. Then you'll see just how much of a stalker I really am.
Me. You're insane. You wouldn't dare come to my room.
My blood's almost at boiling point. I can't believe this motherfucker. He's unconscionable.
Ren.
I might. I might not. Safer for you to come to me, though.
Me. You really think I'm stepping foot back into that house where the three of you could do God only knows what to me?
The little dots don't fire up right away this time. It takes a full minute before they reappear, and I stand by the window in my room, staring out at the gradual dusk that's creeping toward the academy, questioning my own sanity. Why do I want him to reply so badly? How can I be this stupid?
Ren.
Pax and Dashiell would never lay a finger on you. They know they'd never walk again. But whatever.
If you don't want to come here, I'll come there. Meet me in the attic, 8 p.m.
The attic? He knows about that place?
God, is nowhere at Wolf Hall safe from this guy?
Me.
No, Ren.
He doesn't reply.
Me.
I'm not gonna meet you, Jacoby. I do not have a death wish.
My phone sits in the palm of my hand, silent, until the screen fades to black.
17. Elodie.
I told him I didn't love him, but he just won't let it drop. I don't know what to do. He follows me around like a lost puppy that I just kicked. If I didn't feel so guilty about hurting him, I'd probably be mad at the fucker. He even got Levi petitioning on his behalf now.
Stop laughing, Elodie. It's not funny.
Jesus, I've missed the sound of Ayala's heavily accented, beautiful voice. Her parents are both from Dubai, but she grew up in Spain. She spoke just as much Spanish as she did Arabic when she was in kindergarten. And by the time she was 8, she could speak French and German too.
Poor David, I groan. He's been obsessed with you for so long. He must have thought he'd won the lottery when you agreed to go on a date with him.
And then you crush him like an ant beneath the heel of your Manolo Blahniks. It's just...
It's so sad, Ayala, I tease.
Maybe you should give him a chance.
Lord, don't you start. You guys are my friends. You're supposed to be on my side.
Lying on my bed, I stare up at the ceiling, trying not to think about the space above my head. The attic isn't directly above my room. I haven't been able to pinpoint the precise spot that it sits over. From my many educated guesses over the past 80 minutes, I've decided that it's probably over the stairwell that leads up to the 4th floor and the entryway on the 1st floor, but I can't be 100% sure. Regardless of where the attic actually is geographically, architecturally, whatever, it feels like it's right over my head, and Ren is up there already, sitting there in the dark, waiting for me, like the eternally patient predator that he is.
I am on your side, I tell my friend. He's just so sweet.
And when was the last time you went all weak at the knees for a sweet boy? Ayala counters.
I know you, Elodie. Where guys are concerned, you and I are carbon copies of each other. We might think we want someone kind and caring to dote on us, but the moment that becomes a reality, we run for the hills. We're both as fucked as each other. We like our boys bad and belligerent, or there's just no spark.
My cheeks grow very, very hot.
I don't fall for bad boys all. I just don't. Why would I want to punish myself like that?
Ayala's boisterous laughter pours out of my headphones.
You're kidding, right? You do remember Michael, the guy you lost your virginity to? He treated you like a goddess, and you broke up with him because he, and I quote, didn't stand up for himself when you had a fight.
That's normal, I argue. Who doesn't defend themselves if their girlfriend's being crazy?
So you were being crazy then?
Yes, I was crazy all the time, and Michael just sat there and took it, which meant he was even crazier than me. I'm not gonna date a psychopath like that.
I'm aware of how crazy I'm sounding right now, but I'm sticking to my guns on this one. Just because I wanted a guy with a backbone doesn't mean I have a thing for bad boys. Ayala's so wrong.
All right, she laughs.
Well, I'm gonna have to go anyway. It's 4:30 in the morning, and I need to go drink a gallon of water so I don't end up with a hangover in the morning.
We miss you so much, you know.
I can't tell you how glad I am you're not dead.
Thanks. I'm glad you're not dead, too.
You know what I mean. Your dad's such an asshole, Elodie. Seriously. If it wouldn't earn me a whole heap of really shitty karma, I'd wish something really bad on the guy. Like 2 broken legs.
or that he'd be involved in some horrific accident while on a training exercise and his dick and balls gets blown off by an IED. I'd prefer not to talk about my father's junk. But yeah, a couple of broken legs would be nice. I'll wish it on him for the both of us and take double the bad karma, if that helps.
It does. Night girl, please come back and visit us soon.
You come here and visit me.
No way Colonel Stillwater is going to allow me to fly back to Israel for a vacation anytime soon. If I could figure out a way to head back there without him knowing, that would be one thing. But my father would know the instant I left Mountain Lakes. He'd fucking kill me.
Okay, okay, Ayala says. I can hear her broad, infectious smile in the tone of her voice.
Call me, Elodie.
I will. The line goes dead. I just lie there for a minute, staring up at the ceiling, feeling the pressure of the headphones in my ears, not willing to take them out and admit the call is over just yet. It went dark a long time ago. The tiny lamp by my bed casts a fuzzy orange halo on the ceiling, warped and stretched by the pitch of the ceiling's uneven surface. I will not check the time. I will not check the time. I won't fucking do it. A door slams a few rooms over, and a gaggle of high-pitched female voices ricochet off the corridor walls as a handful of my fellow classmates head off out together somewhere. I close my eyes, fidgeting on the mattress, which still feels too new and too hard and not broken in yet. Take a look. What'll it hurt? Knowing the time isn't going to knock the planet off its axis, dumbass. Just open your eyes for fuck's sake. I relent, even though I don't want to. The clock in the top right-hand corner of my cell phone's display reads 7:49 in the evening. 7:58. Ren's probably walking up the driveway to the academy, even as I'm lying here, moping around like some sort of friendless, hopeless, moronic loser. I get up, pretending to myself that I need to stretch, which is so pointless and stupid that I give myself a firm telling off in my father's voice. I know perfectly well that I've gotten up to look out of the window, and trying to convince myself otherwise is pure folly. Frustration sweeps over me when I realize I can't see the driveway from the vantage point my window offers. Only the maze and the sprawling expanse of lawn is visible from the east wing of the house, which means I won't be able to see if Ren's on his way here or not.
He won't come. He's testing you. He wants to know if you'll jump when he commands. You are not going up into that attic, Elodie Stillwater.
I don't know why I'm repeating this to myself. I already know I'm not going up into the attic. I do have a little self-respect. The clock on my phone updates, 7:53 p.m. If I had my laptop, I could be watching reruns of The Office right now. I could be doing some of my homework. I could spend 5 hours spiraling down a YouTube hole watching videos about rescue dogs finding their forever homes, and Adam Driver, and Timothy Chalamet, and 1,500 movie trailers promoting films I'm never likely to watch. Hurling myself back onto my bed, I close my eyes, stacking my hands on top of my stomach. God, this is so fucking stupid, I mutter.
Vern, 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 Vern.
I'm so startled by the powerful vibration that buzzes my ribcage that I nearly fling my phone out of my hands. My ears are full of the sound of rushing blood as I check to see who the message is from.
Ren, don't disappoint me. And that's all it takes. Suddenly, I'm livid. Just who the fuck does he think he is? Don't disappoint him. He's not my father. In actual fact, he's no one to me. I owe him nothing. I definitely don't have to worry about making him fucking happy. He can kiss my fuck.